You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi there, and welcome to Comedy Album Book Club, the podcast in which we listen to an influential, loved, hated, or rarely heard comedy album and then talk about it with comedians and comedy nerds. I'm your host, Jason DeLine, an actor and comedy enthusiast. In this episode, we discuss Maria Bamford's sixth album, Ask Me About My New God. It's highly recommended that you check it out before listening further to the podcast. Maria Elizabeth Sheldon Bamford was born just north of Malibu, California, at the Port Hueneme Naval Base, where her father was stationed as a Navy doctor in 1970. As a child, she dealt with depression, anxiety, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. She attended the University of Edinburgh for a year, becoming the first female member of the school's improv troupe, the Improverts. She then finished her Bachelor of Arts degree in creative writing at the University of Minnesota. Her first stand-up performance was at the age of 19 in 1989. Since then, Maria has put out 7 albums, guest starred in many TV series and movies, and in 2016, Maria's show about her life, Lady Dynamite, premiered on Netflix and ran for 2 seasons. Known for speaking candidly about mental health issues and her dysfunctional family, Maria also uses surrealism and vocal impressions to tell her stories. Film producer Judd Apatow has described her as the funniest woman in the world. On today's episode, I'm joined by my co-producer and comedy nerd, Matt Ardill, as well as our guests, comedians Jess Grant and Tracy Hamilton. You'll learn more about them right now on Comedy Album Book Club.
All right, guys. Well, welcome to another Comedy Album Book Club. I'm your host, as always, Jason DeLine, and I've got my producer, Matt Ardill, as always. How are you, Matt?
Good, thanks.
Good to hear. And today we listened to the album Ask Me About My New God, 2013 album by Maria Bamford. And it is actually her 6th of 7 albums so far. And we're going to talk about why we listened to this one. My first guest today is Jess Grant. She's an improviser. She's on the show Moonstruck the last Thursday of every month at the Bad Dog Theater. The next one is February 28th. Welcome, Jess.
Thank you so much.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. This is great. I enjoy this show. I enjoy this format. And it's great to have you here.
Good to be here.
And we're going
to
talk a little bit more about Moonstruck. Tell us about it.
Ah, absolutely. Moonstruck was came about through, I think, a discussion between Paloma Nunez and Sarah Hillier, very awesome
improvisers,
comedians, actresses.
Yeah.
And they both know the kind of odd improv format, the Herald.
Right.
And they wanted to do the Herald again and came up with this idea of doing a Herald inspired by a dream. Mm-hmm. So the format of the show is 3 solid scenes. Oh, well, the suggestion is a dream from one of the audience members, and then we use that to inspire our set.
Which can sometimes get really detailed. I've seen the show and it's wild what some people will offer up to you.
Yeah, it is really wild. It is really wild. And we get to pretend we're like analysts in the beginning and that we deconstruct the dream. Yeah, it's really fun and a really neat way to improvise.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, well, go see it. February 28th is the next one. Last Thursday of every month, Moonstruck at Bad Dog Theater. Mm-hmm. My other guest is a stand-up comedian and writer. She hosts a monthly show at Comedy Bar called Love Is Everywhere. Her name is Tracy Hamilton. Welcome, Tracy. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming. Tell us about Love Is Everywhere.
Yeah, Love Is Everywhere is a show all themed around like positivity and the science of happiness. Mm. So we give comedians assignments a few days before the show of things that are supposed to boost your happiness levels.
Oh, interesting.
And then we interview them about it before they do their set. And then we also have improv on the show. And for that, we bring in just people from our regular lives and give them assignments. And then our interviews with them inspire the improv. Jess has actually done my show.
Oh, yeah?
I love it. Yeah.
So is it a fun, light, a silly show, or is there darkness that creeps in?
It is, but there's totally darkness. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Me and my co-host, Cassie Baratis, who's also an improviser, we don't really put too much pressure on ourselves to have it all be funny, because especially when you're talking about trying to boost your happiness levels and stuff, you have to just talk about where you are to begin with a little bit.
Yeah, it can be a serious journey, right? That doesn't necessarily
And then, like, the way that we put it is kind of like we're all falling apart all of the time. So this show is just like, here's some tools to help put yourself back together.
That's very cool.
So we're very honest. Like when we check in with each other at the beginning of the show, like, oh, how was your month? Like we're very straightforward. Wow. If it wasn't good, we're going to tell you it wasn't good.
It's interesting. And so how do audiences respond to that? What's the feedback been?
It's funny. It really like bonds the comedian and the audience, I think, because they know that they're being vulnerable. And because we tell the comedians when they're talking about their assignment, don't worry about making that part funny.
Okay.
Like, we don't need that part to be funny. You have a part where you do stand up. We need the part where we're talking about your assignment to be just sincere. Whether it ends up naturally being funny or not doesn't matter. We just need it to be honest and authentic. Cool. And I think that the audience really responds to that. Mm-hmm. And it gets really attached.
Interesting. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, people love storytelling. And that sort of borders that, you know, between stand up and storytelling and realness. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. So the comedians who take part, they talk about their assignment, and then do they do a set based on that?
So they do stand up afterwards, but it doesn't have to be on theme. It doesn't have to be related or anything. I find a lot of the times the stand ups are kind of hard to predict how they're going to work in the interview. Sometimes I catch them trying to sneak in bits.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Which I know because I work with them and see them. And stuff, and I'm like, I know that you're doing a bit right now. Like,
what's
I
the
just
punishment?
Want you to talk about your gratitude list.
Do you punish the comedians who put bits in front of the audience?
No, but we do kind of call them on it.
Right.
That's
positively.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for being here. That all sounds very exciting. When is Love Is Everywhere?
It's the third Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. in the Cabaret Room at Comedy Bar. So the next one would be February 20th.
Perfect. All right. Mm-hmm. This episode will be out before that. Yep. So when you hear this, folks, you have a chance to buy Moonstruck and Love Is Everywhere tickets to do that. Unfortunately, you can't buy tickets to Maria Bamford.
It's sold out.
Yeah. That show's probably coming on by the time we air this.
It's a March.
Oh, it's March.
I know. I think like maybe the end of February and the beginning of March.
Okay. So. Oh, that's right. That's what it is. Yeah. It's like a Thursday to Saturday thing. But yeah, sold out, folks. Sorry, they added new shows, but popular comedian. We're going to talk about why. So Jess, you chose today's album.
I did.
Tell us why.
It was a really tough choice.
Did you want it to be Maria Bamford? Were you choosing between other Maria Bamfords, or was what were you choosing between?
I knew I wanted to do Maria Bamford for sure, and was really excited that nobody on this podcast had done it yet.
Yeah.
And I think this album specifically, I'm not sure. I think a lot of the jokes, kind of similar to your show, Tracy, where it's okay to be very dark. Mm-hmm. There's darkness and then it gets very light, or it's very light and then it gets dark. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that so much. I think too, as someone kind of who goes along with a lot of feelings of darkness inside, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be feeling like this, or everyone seems okay, but like just getting along in life, I'm a little bit like, how are we doing this? Ah.
Yeah.
That this album, particularly, I just felt so like, oh, it's not just me. Like I can never, listening to the album, what I really love, I hear the joke and I'm like, oh my gosh, like she gets it kind of thing. And then you hear everybody laugh and I'm like, and they all get it.
Yeah.
Like it's like a musical kind of thing where I'm like, we're all in it together.
It's sort of a unifying thing, isn't it? And, and she doesn't talk about it like it's a past thing when I was ridiculous and I got over with it. Can you believe how dumb I was then? Now I'm this cool comedian. Like it's, she lives it still.
Exactly.
And, and it's okay. And that's, it's pretty cool. How does this compare with other, or you have a point you want
to
say?
Well, just on what you're saying, I was thinking of this earlier today where I was like, and I don't know, I don't want to say Maria Bamford isn't sexy. She's sexy. But there's, it's not cool,
right?
And that
she's a vulnerability to her that is bare, like she's raw, but
and just basically it's okay to feel
in a delicate way in some ways,
and
but
delicate,
still strong,
and kind of low, and then it just makes me so excited, I guess.
Cool.
That it, there's something about listening. Sometimes when I listen to female comedians, I guess I've always seen myself as an outsider. Also, I think a lot of the things I'm going to say on this are very narcissistic, maybe.
It's all right.
But I think I've always sort of seen myself on the outside of like sexiness and being cool. And like, again, how do you fit in? And listening to Maria Bamford, I guess I feel like all that stuff is kind of, the comedians on the periphery with me. Mm-hmm. And then it's something for our people, I guess, on the periphery of society somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. But do you find there's more of that in this album than other albums, or have you listened to many of her other albums? Or?
I have. Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe this one is a little more comfortable with being dark.
Okay.
Possibly.
When did you first find it?
This album?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure. I think maybe when it first came out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these jokes, I think maybe I saw her live do some of these jokes first.
Where'd you see her?
At Comedy Bar.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I bought like two tickets, like I went twice in a row and then was like, can I go a third time sort of thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's her set like? Is it like note for note the exact same thing or does she play
it's
around?
It's pretty tight.
It is,
I don't think she, from what I know anyway, I think things are like right on the money. And I think it's, I find her jokes too, the way they're written. There's no wasting any energy kind of thing, I would say. Anyway, I'm interested to know what you guys think.
Every word is necessary.
There was one that I really like where she's talking about all the emotional, she's not dating, but all the romantic emotional things she's going to use for other relationships in her life. And I cannot get over in that joke how the setup, it's a very kind of abstract, unique perspective in the setup, and you get it so quickly.
Yeah.
She
has a shorthand that is just enough, right? Like,
but we're
economical.
In this kind of very, to go into someone's inner world is not an easy thing to do, but she brings us in there in a snap.
Yeah. She trusts us to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I really appreciate about her work as well, is there's not a lot of talking. There's not a lot, things aren't drug out. It's just very concise.
You don't hear
very
a lot of people talk that way. People focus on her voices and things like that, and that she talks about real raw things. But yeah, people don't talk about how economical her sets are, and how, like, if you look at the set list for this album, there are 33 tracks. So, you know, some of them sort of bleed into each other, but that's a lot of different concepts, like short things that just ram up against each other, and it's just enough and she's out, and
and
it's great.
None of them are easy either.
No.
Like 33, and we're going all these very difficult topics, and she leads
and
us
most of it works.
Yeah.
What about you, Tracy? When was your first experience with her that you remember? You're a fan, obviously.
I am a fan. It would have been probably around the time, maybe just before this album came out, that I would have found her.
2012, somewhere
around there. But what I think is so interesting is, like, she's so silly at the same time as being able to talk about things that are dark.
Yeah.
And the fact that she is, all of her jokes are so tightly written while still seeming so loose and playful.
Yeah, like, it seems like stream of consciousness, mm-hmm. right? But it's just so well written. It's all in her delivery. She's got this spacey feel to her, but that turns intense, like, on a dime.
And, yeah. And it's interesting to watch her live and see that, like, she does deliver the jokes pretty much the same way, but she makes it seem like everything that she's doing is so in the moment.
Yeah.
And so spontaneous, which is a very difficult thing to recreate from show to show.
Totally.
So that's, like, mm-hmm. a very unique talent to her, I think.
She reminds me of Robin Williams in a lot of ways. She has all these voices that come in and out, and she just seamlessly transitions into them. And expertly, like, she's a fantastic just voice talent aside from all the comedy. But then the frenetic pace, and it feels like a stream of consciousness, but it's like Robin written so well and so tightly.
Yeah.
Like, all this stuff is planned, but doesn't feel that way. And you feel like you're just along for this ride with this person with this ability that nobody mm-hmm. has, the stream of consciousness. And I don't even know how you write to that. Like, you have to have two different talents, I think. You have to be a great writer and a great performer who can perform what you're intending. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's true. There are even all these points where she'll start a sentence but not finish it
mm-hmm.
and interrupt herself.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you've completed the whole sentence in your head.
Yeah.
And like, oh, it's just,
yeah.
Blows me away.
And that's even succinct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
She's like, she knows I only have to say the first four words of this sentence and they'll finish the rest of it and then I can jump into the next part.
Yeah, it's so true.
And even sometimes just a little aside, or like she'll just toss away, like there was one where it was, oh, I doubt that's true, which is like the perfect punctuation. And it's like, could have been a bit on its own, but it's like, that's all you need. You get the laugh from that one little sentence.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to the other bit now.
Yeah.
Well, and it also, to me, that stuff underscores how intellectual she actually is. Because she'll talk about stuff in a character voice, and it seems very, you know, she'll be playing somebody who's you know, sounds dumb or sounds superficial or something. And then just that little aside is like, oh, that's not you. You're in on this joke.
Uh-huh.
And I love the idea of how she becomes these people who aren't real. Like, they're not based on, she's not saying, here's somebody I met, here's a celebrity or whatever, but she makes fun of people without having a victim, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the same with the mental health. She talks about mental health in a very real way. She laughs at it. She makes it funny, but you never feel like you're laughing at victims. And I think mm-hmm. that's amazing. Like that line about, and then someday someone's going to leave you in a wheelchair for 5 hours up against a wall. mm-hmm. And like, everybody sort of looks guilty when they laugh at that joke because mm-hmm. it seems so real, mm-hmm. but we're not making fun of a real person. It's just that, oh yeah, like that crap happens and life is kind of shitty. And she brings it to light without anybody suffering because of it. And I mm-hmm. feel like she's been able to do that on so many topics where it lets us laugh at things that we're not really allowed to laugh at,
mm-hmm.
but the difference is we're not pointing at anybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like she does it. Something I appreciate about it is self-help, like mm-hmm. this also sort of new agey, like the universe mm-hmm. and like, if you ask the universe in the correct way, it's mm-hmm. going to give you what you want and all that stuff. And I will confess here on the air, I've spent a lot of money that I didn't really have on like trying to figure out these different ways to be at peace with all right. these different like forces and my own forces and all our energies and everything. And so that's something. And then I've always been kind of like, is this just a bunch of crap? Like, what's going on?
and what's the answer?
I don't, I'm like,
I think it's both.
It's both.
Yeah. And yeah. Like, I think that when she's talking about it, she kind of acknowledges that. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think anybody, because I have also spent quite a bit of money on this same journey.
I think we have some books to sell. Sounds like we've got some easy marks here.
Yeah, we've got some recommendations. We'll give you a list.
We should write a self-help book after you've done a lot of self-help.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Well, My that's, there is a book of that already. You Are a Badass.
Oh, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was, she went and read like basically every self-help book and then boiled it down into the useful parts.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
That is a good book, by the way.
Is it?
Right. You should check it out. Yeah. She wrote two, I think.
Mm-hmm. She wrote another one about money.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Money.
Yeah.
How would you guys classify Maria Bamford? What type of humor would you say or style that she uses?
Ooh.
I think it's interesting because it's like, it's evolved. Like, see, if you watch her on the Comedians of Comedy and that Burning Bridges tour album in like 2003, which is where I was introduced to her, was like through Patton in that.
Right.
Era. Right.
Less accessible back then, I would say.
Yeah. Well, it was more surreal. It was more surreal and is heavily character driven, but the character, like now the characters are more internalized. They're like her own voices.
Right.
It was like, you know, jumping from character to character. Right. She had a violin as a part of her act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was broader, but I think, you know, with the special, that was sort of like marked a turning point in the way that like a lot became much more internalized in the material that she did. So I think it evolved from like absurdist to confessional. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
While still maintaining
absurdity. Yeah, yeah.
Which is funny because I think that's true of a lot of comedians where they start out very external, commenting on their environment.
Observational.
And then as they get more comfortable and have a stronger skill set, they're able to kind of start pulling from themselves and their own life and be more confessional. And she's just found a way of maintaining the, like, it's character driven while at the same time being she is the character. Like,
yeah, it's a neat spin on it. I've talked about this before where I find that we're at a time in comedy and probably for the last few years where I think audiences demand that kind of, not necessarily self-deprecating, but more of an intimate, vulnerable, personal story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at the most successful comedians now and it's about them breaking down their walls and talking about who they are. And then the audience relates to them as opposed to just somebody out there sort of making fun of everybody else. Mm. You've got that wall that doesn't go away.
It's interesting too, in that if you look at the comedians, like, oh, college kids stink today, they're all too PC. They're all people who practice that sort of old style of comedy where it's not it's not self-reflective at all. It's like, I'm tossing out this, like, you know, what about like airplane food? You know, it's technically a good joke.
Right.
But it just doesn't identify.
People today demand more empathy from their performers. Yeah. They want to be able to relate to someone they like or have a shared experience.
And I think people are just like desperate for connection.
It's true. Yeah.
Right? Like, we're all so separate now. And like, especially what you were saying about like doing college shows and stuff like that. These are young people who have had the internet their whole lives. Mm-hmm. Like, we're separated by so many barriers that people are just desperate to feel like they're connecting with someone. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why more and more we want confessional comedians. We want comedians who really open themselves up and like show you all of their pieces.
Yeah.
Because we just want to see somebody's pieces.
And it seems very brave. I think there's a lot of jokes on this album that hearing them again and again, the first thing that comes to me is like, this is really brave.
Yeah.
Where she talks about being in an institution and all that kind of thing is, she didn't have to tell you that. You know what I mean? That's something that understandably would be hid, but she's like, no, you need to know.
And it gives her so much authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
It gives her that empathy. Like, you know, I've never met her, but I like her.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I'm not getting a character version of her, even though she does the characters. I feel like she's laying herself bare.
Yeah.
Even though it's written and it's memorized and it's done the same every day. Like, you feel that she's connecting with people in a really cool way.
Yeah.
And she's talking about stuff that not a lot of people have talked about at all.
Mm-hmm.
And those, as far as comedians, and those that have, are making fun of it.
Yes.
It's punching down.
Yes. Yeah.
And, that is, to me, is the most interesting thing about her. Like, I remember liking her. I think the first time I saw her was her first set on Conan, on the Conan O'Brien show, the old Conan show. And
I was like, who is, it was very surreal then, very absurdist. I was like, who is this person? She's wild. And then I just started to read and learn more about her. And I thought, oh, she's very brave, like bringing her sort of illness out here. But beyond that, she deserves credit for doing that so well.
Yeah. Because now no matter how depressed you get, how like pushed the precipice you are, there's still a comedy album for you.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she's going to tell you to stay alive. Like that's tremendous, I think.
Yeah. What do you think she does that lets her, I mean, because people talk about how there's been controversy about some of her stuff. Some people really don't like it. She's been critiqued for being insensitive and talking about things we don't talk about. Like, but for the most part, she gets away with it. And why is that? Why do you think?
Because it's hers. Like,
she owns it.
Right. Like as she has bipolar too, she can talk about being in an institution. She can talk about mental illness and the stigma around it and how everybody's like, oh, whatever, we're all depressed. Like she can relate it to cancer because she, what she's talking about is her own experience of it. I feel like that's different than being somebody from the outside commenting on it. And I think, yeah, it gives her a sense of like credibility. Like she knows what she's talking about. She can she can joke about this.
Well, see, it's like I saw Carrie Fisher's one woman show, and it covers similar material because like Carrie Fisher's literally in the diagnostics manual. There's a picture of her.
Yeah,
so she's like the first formal diagnosis of bipolar. And,
I didn't know that.
It's like similar material, and it's nobody gives her. I think it's almost like people look at stand-up and they're like, oh, well, you shouldn't be doing this. And it's like, well, yeah, you should. Like, nobody gave Carrie Fisher crap for talking about these subjects.
Right.
Because, oh, well, she's a famous actress and this is her one-woman play. So I think people, and I think this is an evolution in comedy because I think you see these complaints less now as people have become more familiar and they realize, oh, there's more to stand-up than, you know, cracking wise about one thing. It's a much more deep and broad sort of platform than otherwise people would think. So
I'm finally starting to realize that I've always been fascinated by comedy and the history of it and thought it was an important art form for various reasons. But now when you hear something like this, it seems more important than ever, like to be able to have something like this for people to listen to where it's not a medical textbook or, you know, platitudes from a counselor saying it'll get better. Like, you know, you're hearing somebody in the middle of it, find laughter in the pain. And, you know, I think that's a pretty great thing. It's rare, to be able to have that message spoken directly to you if this is what you're going through.
Her show does that really well too, Lady Dynamite.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That show is incredible.
It is.
Listening to her voices, there's things that I'm like, oh, okay, that's this character. That's like, yes. Her sister is split into two people.
Yeah.
So her sister is the best friend back home and that assistant, who new agey assistant, because her sister is a shaman.
Yeah.
I looked up her up on like, she is a professional shaman and life coach. And I'm like, when in her early stuff, she talks about her sister she's like a medical examiner. So she like quit working at the coroner's office to be a shaman in life. Like what a weird jet. And it's like, oh, like this slots into this little bit of Lady Dynamite and this a little bit of Lady Dynamite over here. And you know, immediately, like she is able to do such amazing shorthand with those voices. Like you're like, oh, okay, this is what she's saying here, this is what she's saying here, this is this person, this is that person. And even if she reuses the same voice, it's like, oh, within the context of the bit, you know, oh no, this is a different person, or this is a
Or it represents a certain hierarchy.
And
like
some
the LA people, the one about the they take their food away from
you're done.
And you're again, super simple. And just using that voice, saying
so
those same words again.
Just go right there.
And you see the waitress in your mind.
Yeah,
there's another voice she does that's similar to that one, but I can't think of what it was exactly. But it's slightly different. It's a little bit more valley-like.
Yeah, that's sort of like her generic white woman.
Right. But to slip in and out of that, like I really admire how specific and technical she can be with that. And I find it fascinating that she, I shouldn't say chooses, but I guess the voice that she's most comfortable with, that she uses, it seems very small and delicate and unintrusive, but
a lot of characters she plays seem to have more confidence and a clearer voice. And it blows my mind that she's able to do that, mm-hmm. but it's not the voice she chooses to use all the time because she knows it's put on. Mm-hmm. That fascinates me.
Well, there's an entire story arc in the second season of Lady Dynamite where she does the fake voice and gets a boyfriend. Right.
Yeah.
That was the first season of Lady Dynamite. She does that like generic voice. Like, yeah. Oh, hello.
She's out of the party, yeah.
Yeah, she meets this handsome young man. And
I've never met anyone who could talk that way who didn't talk that way all the time. if you can talk like this, why would you then talk like this all the time? Like that's sort of the, yeah. I find it very interesting where her comfort zone
but
is.
But it's interesting how talking about like, how does she get away with talking about such dark material is kind of that cute voice.
That's
which
true.
Is like, and then she's like talking about like death and suicide.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it kind of works.
And she also, you know, she did a couple of questionable accents in there too, but she, you know, mm-hmm. they come and go pretty quickly. Yeah. But she doesn't catch heat for it.
Yeah, and I think the thing again too is it's never mean. Like when she did the store clerk, it's like that's just her store clerk. It mm-hmm. wasn't a bit. And
it wasn't about being Indian.
Yeah. Yeah, what was funny about it wasn't that she was doing the accent or that it's an Indian guy who owns this liquor store. Yeah. It was that he's like, don't try and change it. Like,
acknowledge me. Don't
just
try
acknowledge
to fix
my
me.
Experience.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Right.
And she sets it up because isn't the fake tiger thing before that?
Yeah.
So
is.
She kind of talks about how she can't speak these languages,
that's
but she's
true.
Pretending to.
Yeah.
Which is a really great way to give her permission to then
that's
jump
true,
around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. She sort of set herself up for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's a really well-crafted album. Like it's very smooth just listening to it front to back
we
did. But you can, when you look at those track listings of the 30, whatever it is, you can very easily see where all those categories are in different bits, but they blend so well.
Like
yeah.
Tracks that are 30 seconds.
Yeah.
There. Like just, it's,
and then there's some that are like 7 minutes or something.
And then, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to keep track of them as we went, and it was hard. I'd wait for a word to pop up. Oh, okay, now we're into this bit, and it kind of segues seamlessly. But yeah, it takes a tremendous amount of, mental power to keep everything in order and to flow. And it feels like there's not one word misspoken. There's no ums or ahs. Like,
that's
incredible performance.
She did stumble because like that laugh lady.
Yeah.
That was I'm glad that stayed on the album because that was like one of those gifts.
Absolutely.
Comedy, it's like this person, cause that laugh.
Yeah.
All through the album.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that she waits until like halfway through before she acknowledges it. So you as the listener have definitely already noticed
that.
Yeah.
Finally.
That's why I should never go to anybody's album recording.
You have a loud,
obnoxious
laugh.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite. I love laughs like that.
I went to look at an apartment one time and I guess a friend of mine lived across the hall. And she came out of her apartment and she was like, I knew you were here because I heard your laugh while I was looking at an apartment that was across the
that's
hall.
Brilliant.
So,
wow.
Yeah, I'm not hiding. That's for sure.
I think that's great. I wonder what she does laugh a little bit on the album, Maria. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know what her full out laugh sounds like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably a ruckus laugh. I just gives me the feel that when she enjoys something, she enjoys it fully.
What about you? What's your go-to laugh? Are you a chuckler or a giggler?
I snicker and then break out into like huge laughs.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like last night when I went to the comedy bar and my friend who doesn't go to comedy very much, she's just like next to me like, oh Jesus, you. Because I'm like, enjoying every bit of the thing. But I mean, like, why not laugh?
That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. It's good for you. What about you, Jess? You a big laugher?
Big laugher. I also tend to laugh when there's no joke. Where it's like it could be something simple where it's like, you know, I have this mailbox and I'll be like, oh my God. And then I'll laugh and everyone looks at me and I'm like,
about
oh
mailboxes?
No.
That's really funny.
I often laugh at totally out of place.
I like it. I have a weird thing where I'll get a joke right away, but I'm silently laughing at it for a bit until it boils up and then, ha! And then people think I'm slow.
Oh,
the first like 25% of your laughter is inaudible.
Correct.
And then they just hear the
blast. You're just like swishing it around in your mouth.
Yeah. And then they decide this deserves an outward laugh now. Ha ha. Like, oh, you just getting that? You said three things. Since I really liked it. Yeah, I tend to laugh loud too. People tell me after comedy shows, I knew you were here.
Yeah.
It's usually just one syllable, just ah!
That's the surprise laugh. Where you aren't you weren't prepared for something to be funny and then something funny happens suddenly and you get that like Edna Krabappel like that laugh.
I have the Edna Krabappel laugh. Yeah. It's sincere. All right. We'll take a little break and we will come right back and wrap this up.
Hey, Jason DeLine here of Comedy Album Book Club, reminding you that if you're in the Toronto area this March to come see Comedy Album Book Club live at the 2019 Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival. We're listening to the 1976 album Saturday Night Live from the show of the same name. Our guests include Kerry Donaldson and Ali Entwistle of the sketch duo Brunch, comedy writer and performer Brandon Hackett, and alumnus of Second City and Saturday Night Live, Robin Duke. The show is March 9th at 5 p.m. with tickets available at our website, comedyalbumbookclub.com. It's sure to be a hilarious, one-of-a-kind event. And now, back to the chat.
Really? Redheads have the highest tolerance of pain.
Oh.
So, fight you guys.
Maybe we're
easily
surprised.
Well, this is the start of it.
She won't stop. I'll be like, does this hurt you? And she'll be like, no.
Yes, impenetrable.
Let me get a chair.
Why aren't more superheroes redheads? I have questions.
Do you like surprises? Or do you hate surprises?
I'm neutral to surprises.
Okay.
Yeah. To be in control, so that's what I don't like about surprises.
It probably depends on the surprise. Mm-hmm. Surprise! It's your birthday! Surprise! The cat's dead! Those are two different...
Yeah, those are very different. Yeah. Also, that would be terrible to tell somebody that kind of news.
Surprise! Nana died!
Yeah.
Maybe that's why the people who hate surprises hate them. They just had one... Surprise cat surprise. Death and it mm-hmm. ruined surprise. Please don't say surprise to me. I'll assume my cat's dead. All right, moving right along. Back to Maria Bamford. I know Matt had a scene or a bit he wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so I loved like that church bit.
Yeah.
I've had that experience. And that's the thing I love about her material. Even when she's straying down these really personal strands of thought, there's something that you can tie back to your life and tie back to your experience. So there's a band Hocus Pick Maneuver
who are like, say it one more time.
Hocus Pick Maneuver.
Okay.
So they were on Much. So thinking, they're a cool band. They did this song that's catchy and they did a cover. They did a live set on Much back when Much had music on it. And they did,
it was
like,
called Much Music back in the day, actually.
Back in the ancient times. So they did this like REM cover. I'm like, oh, they're good. I'm gonna check. And this guy, this guy who's in one of my classes, he played Little Abner in the musical that year, and so that's how I got to know him. He's like, oh, they're coming to this cool youth group that I hang out with, and I'm like, I'm naive. I'm like, youth group, that should have been red flag right there. But I'm like, we're down at the Vineyard. They're gonna be there on Friday night, and I'm like, okay. And then I get in there, and it's like, oh, this is church. You snuck me into a church, you jerks. So, here's me. Like, this is, height of my, proto-gothdom, where it's, big, crazy hair and, all black kind of stuff. And
right.
And it's like, oh, my God. So I told, and so that's a real experience.
So what happened? Did you stay?
Well, yeah, I stayed to the end of the concert.
But there was not like a church service or anything like that?
No, but they talked about Jesus a lot.
Oh, really?
It's a total straight-up Christian rock band.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you'd think that Much would have warned you, too. It's like, okay, if you're checking this out, be prepared for some testifying.
There should be a warning label. Yeah. This is actually religious, though.
Now, remember, fair listener, if you believe in this sort of thing, we don't disparage that at all. Please keep listening to Comedy Album Book Club. We embrace people of all stripes.
We definitely do.
Yes.
As far as you know.
Just don't stealth it.
Don't stealth it.
Yeah.
I wonder if he got, like, I wonder if they were excited that he brought a goth. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
Like, this guy probably works like the devil.
Like, I have, like, Ori Necronomicon. It's a good, like, Satanist Bible.
Yeah.
I had the entire 9 yards back then. So
I wonder
like,
if, like,
oh, we got one!
Yeah.
If he converted you, he might have been given, like, a golden cross or a tattoo of Savior across his chest.
Or a bittersweet in heaven.
Yeah. That's
next
probably
to the
it.
Chocolate fountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's pretty sweet. But yeah, so yes, that's up exactly the same as Maria Bamford's experience. Yeah, it's very parallel.
Yeah. But it's just, that's one thing, I just love it. It's like every bit, there's something you can tie back into your life. Like,
mm-hmm.
Even when she's going esoteric. Mm-hmm.
But it's not the regular stuff. It's not like awkward stuff in the bedroom or zits as a teenager or driving as hard or like it's real stuff.
That's true. And when you think about each person, like, what is the thing that I related most to on that album? Mm. For me, it was the her honest dating profile.
Yeah.
I can wear the same outfit 5 days in a row, or I can crouch in the shower and get real small.
Yeah, that's a really interesting. I'd really love to go deeper and talk to her about that specific thing because it's a great joke, great opener for a dating profile, but is it also sort of revealing a crippling depression and bipolarism. Yes, I think it is. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just the thing for me anyway of like trying to appear like everything's great.
Yep.
Like, oh, I'm just going through life content. I'm getting it. Mm-hmm. If you take away that facade and just totally be yourself, I'm like, yeah.
Well, and the more people who talk like this, the more I think we realize that, you know, whose standard have we even been trying to live by? Like, what is this normal? Normal is just everybody keeping their head down, trying to look like everyone else keeping their head down. And then you see someone pop their head up and go, no, this is what we're going through. Yes, thank you.
Exactly.
I don't have to pretend anymore. And
like, I don't understand why dating profiles aren't like, this is probably me on my worst day. And if you can deal with that, then swipe right. Let's meet. Because this is the worst it's going to get. Why do I have to pretend where I'm like, oh, I'm a big nature lover and all
I'm
I do is
someone
eat apples.
Who can, I mean, I believe in being yourself and sharing these things and not hiding, but I still am not, I'm not someone who shares much with many people. It's still a lot of this stuff is very intimate to me. And maybe that's a fear of vulnerability or judgment or whatever, you know, being a guy who's been tall with a loud, deep voice, I feel like maybe there's some certain expectations on me in society or whatever. So if I have a bad day, you know, I keep it to myself or I talk to a small support system and then I tell everybody else, I'm here for you, #Bell, let's talk. But, you know, I've tried in the last couple of years to say, well, here's a bad day I have. Here's a bad time I've had. Just to sort of try to relate and let
it's
people know
so
that even
liberating.
People who seem like they're fine, they're they go through it too.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is really liberating, but it's scary too.
It is scary.
And I still regularly try to decide, what do I share with that hierarchy of people in my life? Like, who's really the closest? Like my mom and dad are related by blood, but I don't tell them everything, you know, because I don't want them to worry about me. And there's this whole weird, crazy cycle with
Whereas
that.
Maria's mom and dad know everything.
For better or for worse,
like,
and they have to live with all that.
The way she's portrayed her mom over the years, it's like this, oh, you can see the evolution in their relationship. It's not going in a nice place. She's like, mom, you're doing damage, you know, like, dial it back.
It's really true.
Yeah, but it's interesting too, like her between this and like what was it, 20%, which is the special old baby.
Because
she got married between this album
and
the next album. And how she talks about relationships is so, like, grand. Like, Heather, my wife Heather, is a big Maria Bamford fan, too. And she's an old baby and 20%. There's this song, like,
Cheryl Hersham.
Cheryl Hersham.
Yes.
Heather will just sing that because she's like, that's us. That's us.
We're
working on it, but
yeah. Like everything is kind of a work in progress. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there's one joke she has on the album before the one we're talking about, where she's talking about, I think she left a door open and her dog died. Like went out the door and her dog, and those, so she went on the internet and found these chat rooms where people had done these horrible things and they didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And she's telling, and she has this line where she says, everybody's doing their best, but sometimes our best is shitty, no good. And I cannot tell you the number of times I've said that to people who are upset about something they've done, mm-hmm. where I'm like, oh, this reminds me of this Maria Bamford line. And it always makes them feel better.
Well, it's a funny turn of phrase too. Like mm-hmm. you're saying something kind of negative, but you can't help but laugh when someone mm-hmm. says that, which yeah. is nice. And that always makes you feel better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I find so neat about her, is like relatable, like we're saying. But then on the church bit, when we were listening to the album, everybody laughed at the line, stop lurking behind your Jimi Hendrix font. And I was like, that's an absurdity line, right? Yeah. But we all are like,
perfect.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It was the little punch that it's like, it's funny, but this just makes it like next level's funny.
Yeah. And it's just how she can be in either place, you know what I mean? Like a little tidbit line that's super relatable that you could tell someone casually, or these kind of more abstract
lines. Everyone would get that, but like the people who do, they're like, wow, that's really cool that you're so sharp and specific.
Yeah And then it's all, they somehow there's not a lot of transition, just like they all fold along somehow. It's great. Something I was wanted to bring up to you guys, I was thinking today, was how she uses anger in this. We were talking a little bit about how cute her voice is, but every once in a while in her jokes, she's anger. And I was thinking about that whole thing, I don't know if it's still true or that's been debunked, about depression being anger directed inwards. Mm-hmm. So she, I don't know. I just like how she talks, how she expresses her anger in a jokey way. But every once in a while, it's not like sarcastic, cool anger. It's like, I'm in a rage.
Yeah.
Well, like the bit about soldiers coming home.
Yes. Suicide,
where she's like, where people are like, I don't know what to do with this. And then she like just lets it out because you should be angry about it. Like, because like nobody's doing anything.
She does like an angry laugh. Like, I thought it must be funny because nobody's taking it seriously.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yes.
And I'm like, thank you for telling me this. And it's not in a lecture way.
No.
It's just mad. And I was just like, sometimes I'm mad and I don't know how to express it either.
And that's just what I love about her stuff too, because you get people, I mean, I love Lewis Black. Mm-hmm. He's hilarious as all hell. But, you know, he comes from that school of comic where it's like, I'm going to yell about the news because this is making me angry. Where it's like, yeah, but you're a great, interesting voice, but there's like 12 guys who came before you doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's no crescendo with him. It's all at 11. You don't go on a journey with him. Yeah. You just get exhausted.
My mom, a retired nurse, and as slim as this mic stand, loves Lewis Black.
Is that right?
She's just like, this guy gets it.
What do you mean? There's a place for it. It's like when I'm in the right headspace, I'm like,
me too.
And I'm like,
well, it's cathartic for a lot of people as a performer and as a listener. And I think Lewis Black is that kind of comedian for sure.
Absolutely. It's just
your id.
Venting. Constantly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's just a vent.
And
my mom needs that, I guess, after she's done making you a sandwich. She's
but she isn't that, Maria. And like you say, it's neat when it comes out once in a while, because then you really feel it, because that's not her thing.
Yeah, it's more of an impact.
When it comes through, right? I love hearing her passion come through on this stuff. And and a lot of times the darkness and the joke goes in a place I don't expect it to, because sometimes she's very supportive, and some of it almost comes across as advice, like encouragement, which is so great. But I love what she's talking about. Someone wants to kill themselves and they say, no, don't do it. Wait till late fall.
Yeah, not the season for it.
Everybody will be mad at you.
That is so dark.
I can't get enough of it.
And then she's talking a little longer about just weird reasons people do things. And then she says, you're never alone. Like, no matter how crazy your idea of happiness is. And that was sort of a double-edged, you're never alone. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a perfect joke because of that, yeah. that particular right. bit where she's like, oh, I'm a, whatever, like a waste of space and a burden on everyone. Well, Grand Canyon.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I have a lot of people, money, and everybody hates me. Hello, Europe. Right? Yeah, like, yeah. that is such a right. perfectly and crafted joke alone, where, yeah. like, that is so funny and so perfectly written. Yeah. And then also lending support to, like, to her audience.
But yeah. I love that that's those two so examples are so big and ridiculous, but also... we're okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. if these giant examples that everyone knows about are fine,
mm-hmm. yeah.
your small, insignificant life is fine, fine too.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the club. Yeah. yeah. I feel like that's a lot of what she's saying is welcome to the club. It's fine. It's yeah. really fine.
Yeah.
We're all doing this.
Yeah.
So have you guys seen her on America's Worst Chef?
No.
No.
So she was on. So I, that's why I found funny because I. Last time she's in town, she talked about it briefly. And then in this album, she has an entire bit about how she can't cook. Uh-huh. And watching her on this, I'm like, oh, she was not joking. And it's like, and she's like, it's like, she's not happy at all. She doesn't want to be on this show. I'm like, when you have a book, I mean, like, and that's one of the things too. It kind of speaks to how daring she is because, like, when you have a bit on your album about, you burn yourself on like a mm-hmm. extension or like a power bar and
yeah, you know, power bar from glove compartment.
Yeah.
Like the can of wine. And it's uh-huh. like, and then go on a show with like Janet Jackson. No, not Janet. It's LaToya Jackson. The kid from like Modern Family. And, you know, Bronson Pinchot. You know, like
wow.
this is the people you're on this show with cooking uh-huh. while these two professional chefs just yell at you.
Oh my gosh.
That's like, have to see this.
Yeah. Me too.
it's an experience to watch. I'm like watching it like, this is making me laugh, but I know she's not comfortable right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, and that's the thing. Her, all of her comedy is like that. It's daring mm-hmm. in a way
yeah.
that's not obviously daring. Like, it's not like, I'm doing this to grandstand. It's like, I'm doing this for me
yeah.
and also for you as the audience.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting at the beginning of the album where she kind of talks about her career. I don't remember what the opening.
She talks about doing advertising.
Oh, yeah. That's
where
so they, good.
She was like, I'm going to write this thing and it's going to be perfect. And they were like, can you just do what we yeah. told you?
And then I did
And
exactly.
I'll give you a big pile of money.
I took that yeah. pile of money.
I took that pile of money.
And now I'm painting my house shades of gray.
Exactly. It's perfect.
yeah. It's. I find that part's interesting. I don't know, just in terms of storytelling. I think earlier we were comparing her to other comics who I would say might go on and on about their story. Mm. Where here she goes here
it's
really
just
quickly
to make the point yep. to get to the joke and then
yeah.
moves on right and then
yeah.
uses a transition.
No filler.
Yeah.
No filler.
It really
yeah.
isn't. Yeah, I want to listen to it again, knowing that because mm-hmm. I appreciate a well crafted joke or story that way. It's mm-hmm. it's enjoyable. Does she have any peers? Who would you say is somebody similar doing what she's doing or has done? I would love to know who her influences are. I haven't heard her speak about that.
She's such an individual. It's so hard
yeah.
to think of.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a personal journey that her stuff
yeah,
all comes
yeah.
from.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like you were saying earlier, Matt, how she started out with one style and then I think went through a lot of challenges with her mental health mm-hmm. and
right.
then sort of then her comedy transformed
yeah, for
after
sure.
that. Yeah.
And doing the characters and stuff, like, no, mm-hmm. people haven't been doing that much for a long time.
No,
you know?
It's pretty unique.
I think there's really, like, I don't think there's really somebody who's quite like her.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I mean, you look at some of her peers from the alt scene back in, you know, L.A. and stuff, like, you know, like Patton and Zach Galifianakis and that group, and there's sort of similarity in their early stuff,
mm-hmm.
especially with Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah.
He does a lot of crazy, absurd stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, like when she diverged, she created an entire new voice that mm-hmm. I don't think we've really seen mm-hmm. in comedy before, which is what I think is so amazing about her.
And mm-hmm. I never gave her enough credit, I don't think, until hearing this album as a great writer and performer. Because I always thought of her as just this sort of scatterbrained person, because that's sort of the persona that comes out. Mm-hmm. But like we've been talking about, like these jokes are so well written, mm-hmm. they're so tight, and they're so well rehearsed. Like she is an incredibly disciplined comedian.
Yeah.
No matter how crazy it sounds, the stuff she's talking about.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that she's just found her voice so perfectly, because there are people who can write great jokes, but it doesn't necessarily match with who they are. Mm-hmm. And you feel like it's a performance, you know, and this kind of cohesion is just something so rare. And again, that reminds me of Robin Williams. Like, I feel like everything he did just was who he was at that moment. Mm-hmm. Like he just happened to walk on stage. Oh, I'm Robin Williams doing this now. And like, she feels like that to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whereas Jerry Seinfeld, I feel like I don't really know who that guy is at all. Like he's a great comedian, but it's a thing he puts on, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and what you do know about him is not from his comedy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. And that's the same for a lot of, I would say, his era of comedians.
Which is kind of a waste, because he is such a fascinatingly weird person.
Yeah, watching his show, I love when these little moments where you're like, oh, that's who you are every day right there.
Yeah.
I've read articles where people say that, you know, he has no need to do that Comedians in Cars Having Coffee.
Mm-hmm. He just wants to drive cars.
But it's not just that. They say he's just a complete narcissist, and like he just wants to be the center of stories. He wants interesting people to find him interesting.
Yeah.
And you kind of, as time goes by, you see that his attitudes don't always change. You know, I've seen him say things about political correctness and things, and he just seems like a very insensitive, old school kind of in his own bubble type of guy.
Yeah, that's why I really like Maria Bamford too, I think, is because I get like, you look at these guys where you're like, you're a living legend, like who could ever get up to the heights you're at, and then you get Maria where she's like, we're all gonna die,
and I'm
like,
she's got this
really sunny way of doing it. Like she's got this sunny darkness, and it's just so beautiful.
I made a note that it's like brightly dark.
It's enjoyable, and it's jarring when the darkness comes out, but then she just goes right back into another part of her, and it's lovely.
I've never met her, but I did reach out to her to be on the show, and she wasn't able to like work it out, but she took the time to personally respond, and like she didn't have to do that. She didn't have to even acknowledge it, but she took the time out of her day. And then, you know, set me up with somebody who might be interested.
Her assistant did that, and she's got power of attorney.
You don't know.
You'll never know.
Yeah, well, she said she responds to her own Facebook messages.
Well, yeah, that's cool. So yeah, she seems like a down-to-earth, nice person.
Just genuine kindness.
Mm-hmm. All right, Maria Bamford, we're fans.
Oh, we're big fans.
And I hope you guys are now, too, if you hadn't listened before and heard us yammer on about it for a while. That was great, guys. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
It was an absolute delight.
I'm so glad to hear that. It was a delight to have you. We have, again, my guest, Jess Grant, who chose the album. Excellent choice.
Thank you.
And can they find you on the Twitter or something like that?
I'm on Facebook, Jess Grant. Yeah. Add
Jess
me.
Jess Grant.
I don't know who
Finder.
You are.
She likes having new friends. And Moonstruck, the last Thursday of every month at the Bad Dog Theater. And of course, Tracy Hamilton, I'm sure you have various gigs going on. Can we find you somewhere to find out what you're up to?
My website, tracyhamilton.net, has all of my shows. .com was taken.
.com was taken.
Oh, yeah. I think .net has a quiet dignity about it. So.
You keep thinking that. and of course, we can find you at Love Is Everything monthly at Comedy Bar.
Yes, please.
Excellent. Matt, you can be found
at Common Person on Twitter.
What do you offer the world there?
Not a lot of retweets of all right. Comedians, basically.
Okay, so, fair enough.
And occasional angry article.
And I'm your host, Jason DeLine, as always, and I just want you to keep listening to this thing. So tell your friends about Comedy Album Book Club. We are going to be appearing for a very special episode at the Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival, and we will be on, I believe, at 5 p.m. And we're very excited. Our guest of honor is going to be the one and only Robin Duke. She is a Toronto comedian, has been for some time, a veteran of Second City and Saturday Night Live. So we're going to be listening to the one and only Saturday Night Live album from the put together from the seasons 1975 and 1976. Should be a really interesting chat. Hope to see you there. Thanks again for listening to Comedy Album Book Club.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.